pain underneath all her anger and bravado. Especially not you. Especially not my best friend. So let me understand this, Bree said, and I could hear the pain in her voice as well. You want me to break up with Wyatt for you? What am I supposed to do? Toby asked, her voice anguished. Am I supposed to still be your best friend and hear everything about this? Listen to you talk about how in love you are? I'm supposed to be happy for you? Toby's voice broke, and she drew in a raggedy breath. I can't do that, she said, shaking her head just once to either side. I just can't, and I want to be friends again, Bree. God, she said, starting to speak faster now, the words coming out all in a rush. I miss you so much. You have no idea. I want to be friends again, and I hate that you're doing this to us. I'm doing this to us? Bree asked. What about you? I looked at Palmer, alarmed, and saw her swallowing hard. Guys, I said, looking between the two of them. Let's not... But this isn't about him, Bree said slowly, like she was hearing the truth of the words as she was speaking them. You just asked me to stop seeing the person I love. Do you realize that? What? Toby asked, frowning. That is just so far from okay, Bree said, shaking her head. What kind of friend would ask me to do that? And what kind of person would I be if I said yes? What kind of friend leaves me behind like this? Toby said, her voice cracking. You were only thinking about yourself. Bree just stared at Toby for a moment, then drew in a big, shaky breath. I don't think you know just how little I thought about myself, she said. And now you want me to break up with him, so it's easier for you. Bree shook her head. That's not good, she whispered, not even bothering to brush away the tears that had started to fall. I need you to be happy for me when I fall in love for the first time, to want good things for me because you're my best friend. You knew I wouldn't be happy for you, Toby snapped. Don't try to make me the bad guy here. I'm not, Bree said, her voice getting more and more composed. I'm just... This is the first thing I've done without you, without consulting you, and that's why you're mad. No, maybe this wasn't about Wyatt. Not really, Bree said, talking faster, latching onto this and holding tightly. Maybe we really needed this break. I mean, it was really hard, but it gave me some perspective. And now, I think we can move on from it and it'll be better. More balanced, don't you think? I held my breath as I waited for Toby to answer. It seemed like even the bus's machinery was quieter. No, she finally said, and I watched Bree's face crumple. What do you mean? She asked, her voice barely above a whisper, like she wasn't just afraid to hear the answer. She was afraid to ask the question. I mean, you're right. Maybe we did need a break. Maybe we still need it. Toby, Palmer said, casting a worried glance my way. Maybe... Do you know how horrible I've felt over the last 2 weeks? Toby asked, turning to look at all of us. It's been the worst time of my life, and I couldn't even talk to my best friend about it since it was her fault. I felt the same way, Bree started, but Toby talked over her. I realized I don't know who I am if I'm not your friend, she said. Like, I have no idea at all, and that's a problem. So... "That's it?" Bree asked, and I could hear the fear beneath her words. "We're done?" "Yes," Toby said, her voice cracking. "I can't do this anymore. I'm done." Bree just stared at Toby for a long moment, then wiped her hand across her face, got up, and walked to the back of the bus, holding on to the empty aisle seats for support.
"We'll be there in 5,
Walt yelled toward the back of the bus, and Toby leaned over to the window and looked out. "I need you to let me off at that Starbucks," Toby said, her voice quiet but decisive as she pointed out the window.
Toby, my dad said, frowning. "I really don't think I can do that. I can't leave you off in the middle of some strange town."
"I'll call my mom to come pick me up," she said, picking up her bag and slinging it over her shoulder. "But I can't be here any longer." Walt looked at my dad, waiting for instruction, and my dad shook his head.
"Even so," he said, "I don't think..."
"If she can't come get me, I'll text Andy, and you guys can come pick me up on your way back to Stanwich," Toby said, a firmness in her voice that was hard to argue with. "But I really need to get off this bus now." After making Toby promise to check in with us in an hour either way, my dad relented, and Toby got off the bus, crossing in the crosswalk and walking toward the coffee shop. The light changed and Walt drove forward, and in the glass behind Toby, I saw the bus slogan reflected as she slowly pulled open the door, her head down and her shoulders hunched. Toward the future.
"Girls?"
my dad called, a little fearfully, toward the back of the bus. "Just a second," Palmer and I yelled in unison from where we were sitting on either side of Bree, who had collapsed into the middle of the back row and was crying into a wad of toilet paper she'd taken from the bathroom.
"I can't believe it,"
Bree said, wiping her arm across her face.
"I didn't think... I mean, she just left."
"I'm so, so sorry," I said, patting Bree's arm, unable to shake the completely illogical thought that it was Toby who would know how to handle this situation best.
"Toby doesn't even like Starbucks," she sobbed.
"It'll be okay," Palmer said, adding quickly, "eventually. I promise." "Why don't we head back home?" I said gently, realizing that if my world had collapsed around me, the last place I would want to be was stuck on a campaign bus in New Jersey. "We'll get ice cream on the way. How does that sound?"
"Really?"
Palmer asked quietly, and I met her eye above Bree's head and nodded. After all, this had mostly been a romantic gesture. Clark was going to be back in Stanwich tonight. I'd just talk to him then.
"No,"
Bree said, looking up at me, her face stricken.
"Andy, you have to go talk to Clark."
"I'll talk to him later," I said. "It's not important, so..."
"It is important,"
Bree said, looking right at me, her eyes puffy from crying.
"That's why we're here, right? And you love him?"
I nodded. "I do."
"Then,"
Bree said, sitting up straighter and crumpling up the toilet paper in her hand,
"you're going to tell him that."
"Are you sure?" I asked. She nodded.
"You know how you're always saying that real life isn't like those movies, and it doesn't actually happen in that way?"
I nodded, and she gave me a trembly smile. "Go prove yourself wrong." In all the movies Toby had made us watch, it was always somewhere very romantic. On top of the Empire State Building, on a rain-streaked airport runway, at a New Year's Eve party. This moment did not, in any of the movies I could recall,
take place in a bookstore in New Jersey packed with fantasy novel readers, many of whom were in costume. And yet, there we were, fighting our way through the crowd that seemed to be taking over most of the downstairs of Clymer Books. A podium was set up at the other end of the store, and there was a table next to it with both of Clark's books on it. Chairs were lined up in rows, an aisle between them, but it looked like every single chair was taken, and a large crowd was filling in the rest of the space. It appeared that Clark's event was standing room only. It probably didn't help that there were so many of us suddenly trying to crowd in. Me, Palmer, Bree, my dad, and Walt. It turned out that Walt was a big fan of the movies, and so was happy to tag along with us after he found a lot to park the bus in. Now, a guy who was dressed in a very detailed elder costume glared at me as I tried to take a step forward, craning my neck to see if I could spot Clark.
Andy?
I turned and did a double take when I saw Tom, looking as shocked to see me as I was to see him.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? I asked, just as Palmer spotted her boyfriend and ran over to him. Tom broke away from kissing Palmer to answer me.
I'm here to support Clark, as a friend and as a reader.
Thomas,
my dad said, holding out his hand, causing Tom to turn bright red.
Congressman, he said, shaking my dad's hand. I mean, hi! How are you doing?
He looked behind my dad.
And Bree, too.
And... He frowned when he saw Walt. Do we know him? He asked in a whisper to Palmer. Before she could answer, though, a bookstore employee, in an apron for some reason, walked toward the podium, tapping on the microphone twice.
Hello! She said, smiling at the crowd.
Welcome to Clymer Books!
She then launched into an introduction, covering how the signing following the reading would work, and that we were required to buy books before having them signed. Then she started to introduce Clark, and as she listed his resume and accomplishments, so impressive for someone so young, I could feel my pulse picking up. Clark was here. He was probably just feet away from me, hiding behind a bookshelf or something. I was here, and so was he, and it really seemed like this was going to happen. I didn't even hear the end of her introduction, but I realized it was over when people started clapping, and then Clark was coming out, adjusting his glasses the way he always did when he was nervous, looking so handsome in his dark blue button-down that it took my breath away.
Hi,
he said, stepping up behind the microphone and giving the crowd a nervous smile before looking down again.
Thank you all so much for coming. I'm actually going to read from my work in progress, if that's okay.
It was like the crowd all held their breath for a moment before everyone started talking at once. I noticed that Tom had an incredibly pleased look on his face, like he was thrilled he had known about this before the rest of the world. Clark said, and everyone quieted down pretty quickly, seeming to realize that if they kept talking, they wouldn't get to hear any of the new book.
It's still pretty new, so it might change. Just letting you know so you don't hold me to anything here.
There was low, polite laughter, and then Clark cleared his throat, looked down at the paper in front of him, and started to read. For the next 10 minutes, the room was silent, except for the sound of people's camera phones clicking. You could have heard a pin drop as Clark read from a section of his new, untitled book. I listened, my hands twisted against each other and my heart in my throat, not quite able to believe what I was hearing, but for different reasons than the rest of the crowd in the bookstore. Because it was about us. It was about all of us. Me, Palmer, Tom, Toby, Bree, even Wyatt.
and the summer we'd had together. It was still set in Clark's fantasy world, but it was about a group of friends off on an adventure together. And when Clark finished and there was deafening applause, I felt a piece of responsibility for it. Like maybe this new book wouldn't be happening if it hadn't been for me. If it hadn't been for all of us. Clark started taking questions then, and it seemed like every hand in the crowd was going up. People wanted to know why he'd taken so long to write the follow-up, where he got his inspiration, and what he thought about the casting of the movies. They wanted to know how to get an agent, when the new book would be out, and who his favorite authors were. The questions kept coming until the aproned bookstore lady announced that they had time for only one more. Palmer gave me a look, and I took a breath. I knew this was the moment. Clark was searching the room through all the hands that were waving frantically, but I didn't wait to be called on. I just stepped forward into the aisle and said a little too loudly, I have a question.
I'm actually calling on...
Clark started before he saw me. I saw his eyes widen before he composed himself, and I could tell that I'd surprised him.
You had a question?
Clark asked, giving me a small, tentative smile.
Yes, I said, making myself take another step forward, trying not to think about the fact that my dad and my friends and a middle-aged bus driver, as well as a crowd of hundreds of strangers with smartphones, were there, and that everyone was watching me.
I actually had a question about two of the more minor characters.
And who might those be?
Carl and Marjorie, I said, and I heard the guy on the aisle next to me ask,
Wait, who? It's canon,
the guy next to him scoffed, and I made myself take another step forward. I could do this. If whole galaxies could change, so could I. For just a moment, I thought about Palmer calling the play. She asked if the cue was ready, but then didn't wait to hear the response before giving the go-ahead. You got a warning, but not time to change your mind or come up with another plan. You just had to act.
What about them?
Clark asked, and I could see the restlessness of the bookstore lady next to him, probably wishing he'd just called on someone else. I was wondering if you were committed to their ending, I said. I heard the guy on the aisle scoff loudly again. If maybe there was any way it could be different.
Thanks so much for that question, the bookstore lady said brightly, clapping her hands together, and my heart sank.
Was I really going to be stopped by a random employee in an apron, without even getting an answer?
No, it's okay,
Clark said, not looking away from me.
I'll answer that.
He took a deep breath, and I could see his eyes searching mine, like he was looking for an answer.
I had thought that was the ending, he finally said. But I might have been wrong.
I was just thinking, I said, sure that the rest of the crowd could probably hear how hard my heart was beating, since it seemed deafening to me, pounding in my ears. That maybe Marjorie realized she was in love with Carl, and told him that. And said she was sorry for being scared. Clark nodded and glanced down at his papers, and suddenly a terrible fear shot through me. What if I was about to get rejected here in front of all these people? Was I about to be turned down in an incredibly public way?
Well,
Clark said after a pause. When he looked up at me, he was smiling. Both dimples flashing.
I think that would certainly change things.
I smiled and felt tears spring to my eyes. Oh, I said, my voice coming out wobbly, and I could feel that I was torn between laughing and crying and on the verge of both.
That's really good to hear.
Clark smiled at me, and from his expression, I could tell that he was feeling pretty much the same way. And then, Clark was stepping out from behind his podium and walking toward me. And I was running toward him and into his arms, and Clark was picking me up, and I wrapped my legs around his waist, and we kissed. And it was like I was blocking out the commotion all around us, the people yelling and talking and laughing and trying to figure out what was happening, and the bookstore lady clapping her hands and trying to get control of the situation.
"Hi," I murmured when we stopped to breathe and Clark set me down to the ground on legs that felt wobbly.
"Hi," he said, running his hand over my hair and cupping my face in his hands. "I missed you."
"Me too," I whispered. I knew that this couldn't last, that there were people waiting and he had things to do and this couldn't go on forever. But in that moment, it was like everything else faded away, and there was only me and Clark and the possibility of us, whatever we might become, stretching forward in 100 different directions, all of them unexpected, each one better than the last, the ending not yet written. And with this thought in mind, and Clark's hands in my hair, I stretched up to kiss him once again. Jack looked around at them, the five who would be accompanying him on this journey.
"Are we met?"
he asked, dreading the answer.
These were the comrades in arms who would help him avenge his sister's death and find the message he knew for certain Tamsin had left behind in the castle for him? This collection of rogues and misfits? He looked at them one by one, realizing as he did that most of them weren't even paying attention, despite the fact that he was, technically, now the king. There was Lord Thomas, who was sulking on a nearby stump, still in the player's costume he'd been wearing when the king's guards had pulled him out of the performance.
"I had a matinee today," he said petulantly, shaking his head. "I've been rehearsing for weeks. My accent's finally perfect. But I suppose you don't care about that."
Next to him were the ladies Sabrine and Hannah, who were, as usual, laughing together at something the rest of them weren't included in. He knew he needed them. Lady Sabrine was the best tracker he'd ever encountered, able to pick out the spot where a deer paused for a second and changed direction. And Lady Hannah had a way with horses that was unmatched. But that didn't mean he wanted to feel like they were giggling about him behind his back, like they'd been doing since he was a boy of 15. Leaning up against a tree, not paying attention to any of this, and certainly not the looks Lady Hannah was sending him, was Sir Wylan, who was, as usual, strumming the lute he seemed to carry with him everywhere.
"No,"
a voice at his side said, dripping with disgust. He turned and saw Lady Andrea, who had insisted for the past week she was coming along, until he'd finally stopped arguing.
"I'm not coming unless you get him to stop playing that thing. I cannot abide it. I'll break it up myself and use it for kindling."
Jack felt himself smile and prayed he wasn't blushing, or he knew he'd never hear the end of it from Sabrine and Hannah. But he couldn't help it. He'd been in love with her from the moment he'd seen her, when she'd stormed into his court and demanded to know what idiot claimed to be running the kingdom. Rather than risk her seeing him blush, Jack knelt down to rub the ears of Bernie, the huge dog that seemed to follow her everywhere, and which he had a suspicion was actually part wolf.
"I'll leave that to you," he said,
backing away slightly when the dog bared inch-long fangs at him.
"I think you can handle it."
We're going to have to be careful, Lady Sabrine said as she stood and pulled Lady Hannah up, ignoring Wylan, who'd reached out his hand to help her. I've heard rumors that the assassin Marjorie is unaccounted for, and for a prize such as you, my lord, I doubt she'd have to settle for the lowest bidder.
Who?
Wylan asked, frowning.
I have an idea, Thomas said, standing up as well and clapping his hands together. What if we leave later tonight? Then I can get the evening performance in and...
No, Hannah and Sabrine said in unison. It'll be dark soon, Lady Andrea said, sheathing her dagger and taking a step toward the woods, dog at her heels. We should get started. Jack took a breath, then let it out as he looked west toward Haver Hall, where they would journey.
Well then, he said, looking around at the assembled group. Let's begin.
C.B. McAllister, The Coin of the Realm, Hightower and Jacks, New York. Advance Reader's Copy. Not for review or quotation. Chapter 20. I took a sip of my latte and looked across the table at flasks. I'd switched to hot lattes at the end of September when it officially got too cold for iced drinks. And now that we were getting close to Halloween, the leaves outside the coffee shop window had all turned color and started to cover the ground. How are you not done yet? I asked, shaking my head. Toby glanced up from where she was currently doctoring her caramel pumpkin latte with sugar packets and cinnamon sprinkles, as she had been doing for, I was pretty sure, the last 20 minutes. You can't rush these things, she said, dropping in a very precise amount of sugar, giving it a stir, tasting it, then nodding and looking back at me. Perfect. What were we talking about? I don't know, it was 10 years ago and I've forgotten. I looked automatically to the chair next to Toby, the one that was sitting empty. This was when Bree would have chimed in, defending Toby or making a joke. But silence just fell between us, and we both took a sip of our drinks in unison. So, she said, before the pause could grow uncomfortable. How's it going with the DMV thing? You mean DVM? Sure, Toby said with a wave of her hand. If you say so. I smiled. I was pretty sure Toby actually knew what it was called and was just doing this to tease me. But there was a chance that she was actually still getting used to it. The change had taken me by surprise as well. In the last month, I had switched my focus from pre-med to veterinary medicine. Now, whenever my dad and I went through my college options, narrowing down where to apply, we were focusing solely on schools that had good veterinary programs. I wasn't sure if the idea had taken root during the night of Birdie and the chocolate, but by the end of the summer, I'd come to my decision. Maya was thrilled. Even though I was no longer working full-time, I was still doing weekend walks for Maya and Dave. Folding a dog into my regular routine seemed like good practice for the winter, because now my dad and I were spending far too much time on pet rescue websites, either when he was here or video chatting when he was in D.C., arguing about what kind we wanted to adopt when he was out of Congress and home in January. One thing that seemed to be clear was that the dog was going to be named Duke. Every time we talked about our potential puppy, that's what my dad called it. And I was trying to accept that I was going to have a dog with John Wayne's nickname. It's good, I said, before Toby could ask me if I would be the person who took people's license pictures. I'd heard all these jokes from her before. How's the track team? Toby groaned, but good-naturedly. It's killing me, she said. These people are maniacs.
And did I tell you that we have practices on Saturdays? Like, in the mornings.
I smiled as I took a sip of my drink.
You may have mentioned it.
She shook her head and started going off about how weekends were for rest, not running. But I had a feeling it was mostly just Toby being Toby. She'd joined the track team right after school started and seemed to eat lunch most days at the track table, laughing with her new group of friends, wearing a ribbon in her hair on the meet days. Palmer and I had gone to one, holding up the signs she had made, but that was before we'd realized just how long they could take.
Anyway, she said with an exaggerated sigh when she'd finished complaining, we have a meet next Saturday, you know, if you're free.
I pulled out my phone, scrolling through the social media apps that were now mine to do with as I pleased, until I got to my calendar. I'm in D.C. next weekend, I said, dropping my phone back in my bag. My dad's giving a speech, and he asked me to be there. I shrugged as I said it, and Toby made a face. But the truth was, I didn't mind at all. Seeing my dad return to work, safe in his lame duck status, had been beyond fun to watch. He'd returned to the house, kicking butt and taking names, determined to use his last few months in office to the best of his ability, no longer pulling any punches or having to say things he didn't mean. As a result, he told me last weekend over pizza, he was getting more done than he ever had before. When his term ended in January, he was already set up with a job at the Stanwich Public Defender's Office. Until then, though, he tried to be home whenever he could and was shooting down the rumors that he was going to run for governor. It wasn't like it had come out of nowhere. My dad's speech at Erickson's event, coupled with the media narrative about being cleared of wrongdoing and leaving at a political high point to spend time with his family, had made him the star of a few news cycles. It was around then that the sitting governor of Connecticut had called him in for a meeting. He wasn't planning to run for another term, which, coupled with news of their meeting, had sent the rumor mill into overdrive. But my dad was denying them all for the moment. He'd promised me he wouldn't consider doing anything until I was at college, and I was very relieved he wouldn't be uprooting my life to Hartford anytime soon. So, Toby said, when the conversation had started to wind down and we'd both finished our lattes. Toby had been folding and refolding her empty sugar packet for the last few minutes, and I knew she was getting up the nerve to ask the question. How is she? Our coffees and lunches usually ended like this, with the reminder that things were not as they had been. When Toby and I met once a week, for the hours we were hanging out, I could almost let myself forget that things had changed, pretend that maybe Bree and Palmer were just running late or something. But we always came back to reality at the end. She's good, I said carefully, searching Toby's expression, wondering if maybe this was the moment that she'd say she wanted things to go back to how they were, or ask me to reach out to Bree for her, anything. But Toby just gave me a half smile and pushed the sugar packet away. I'm glad. Toby and Bree didn't speak for several weeks after Toby walked off the bus in New Jersey. And even Bree and Wyatt breaking up when he went back to school didn't change this, even though Palmer and I had hoped it might. Bree, Palmer, and I had tried our best to adjust to our three-person group. Four, if you included Tom, who always got offended when he was left out. Things between Bree and Toby had gotten better since school started. They'd chat in the hallways occasionally, but they weren't Bree and Toby any longer. Do you think? I started, then reconsidered my words. I mean, maybe you two... Toby raised an eyebrow at me. You were there on the bus, right? You saw the meltdown? She shook her head. I know I went a little crazy. Well, I had kidnapped you and forced you onto a campaign bus,
A smile flitted across her face, and then disappeared.
I know I shouldn't have said the things I did, but... she shrugged. I think maybe this hasn't been the worst thing for me and Bree.
I was about to try and argue with this, but Toby continued.
We needed some space, she said, her voice quiet and sure. I needed to figure out who I was without her.
She looked away from me and folded her sugar packet again.
Without all of you guys.
And? I asked. Toby and I had talked around this over the last few months, but never this directly. And now that we were addressing it head-on, I couldn't help but notice that she seemed calmer, somehow. More centered, like her energy wasn't flying off in 100 directions any longer.
And I'm good, Toby said firmly, looking me right in the eye.
I promise.
So, maybe someday, I said, hearing the hope in my voice. You guys might be friends again.
I knew we'd probably never go back to what we'd had before, but maybe that would be okay.
Maybe, Toby said, giving me a smile.
I hope so, she added a second later, in a voice so quiet I almost didn't hear her. We said our goodbyes and headed out shortly after that. I got into the Mustang, running my hand over the steering wheel for just a moment before checking the time and realizing I had to get going. There was someone I needed to meet. I always thought about my mother a little bit more when I was driving her car, and its presence in the senior parking lot had already attracted a lot of attention, mostly from the science teachers for some reason. But between the car and the portrait of Stabby Bob hanging in the foyer, it was like my mom was around more now. Or maybe it was just that my dad and I were talking about her more. It still wasn't easy, but it no longer felt impossible. We were finding our way through it, together. I drove away from the coffee shop, glancing at the time, hoping that for once I would be there first. Whenever we arranged to meet at our spot, he had an annoying habit of beating me there. And sure enough, when I pulled up in front of Winthrop, there Clark was, sitting on one of the picnic tables, reading a book, a big white dog waiting at his feet, the dog we walked every Sunday. I got out of my car and walked toward him, glancing away from Clark and looking at Winthrop for just a moment. I saw the statue differently now. I decided that he wasn't pointing to anything or anyone. Now, all I could see was that he was reaching out his hand to someone. For me, that explained the expression on his face that I'd never quite been able to understand before. He was hopeful and nervous and scared and a little bit proud of himself for doing it, extending his hand to someone, not knowing if they'd take it. This was, I had realized, one of the scariest things of all, requiring much more courage than sailing across an ocean and landing on an unknown shore. At least, that's what I saw. Clark and Tom's new theory was that he was a time traveler who'd somehow been transported to the past and was just trying to hail a cab. We all still hung out by Winthrop a little, but we hadn't done another scavenger hunt since Toby left the group. This was much to the dismay of a very cute college freshman who really wanted another chance to prove his quest skills. Having a boyfriend in college, I'd learned, wasn't that different from having a boyfriend at school with you. You didn't have any teachers in common, but you could still do homework and complain about classes together. Clark was living in the dorms, finishing revisions on the book while he took classes. He was going to be taking a lighter course load in the spring, when his publisher planned a huge book tour. Fan interest was already reaching a fever pitch, people clamoring to join a lottery to read the early copies. I'd already read most of it, and so had my dad and Tom, though we'd all been sworn to secrecy.
For the first few weeks after we'd gotten back together, I'd been worried that things might fall apart again, not sure that I was up to being in a real relationship, one with actual stakes and feelings and something to lose. But things were going really great, and I was trying to take it one day at a time, trying not to think about schedules or book tours or what would happen when I went to college. We would figure all that out later. But for now, there was just Clark. Just the boy I loved.
"Hey,"
he said, setting down his book and standing up when he saw me, as Birdie lunged toward me, tail wagging wildly. "Hey," I said, walking over to Clark, but Birdie got in the way, and I leaned down and scratched his ears and under his chin, sending his back leg thumping. "Hi to you, too," I said, stepping around Birdie and giving Clark a kiss. We lingered that way for a moment, and then he kissed my forehead and squeezed my hand.
"How was Toby?"
"She was good," I said, smiling at him. "Ready?" He slung his arm around my shoulders, and I wrapped mine around his waist, tucking my fingers through his belt loops, and we started to walk, the dog leading the way, sniffing every available rock.
"I was born ready."
"Please don't say that," I said, shaking my head, and Clark laughed. "That sounds like something Tom would say."
"Well, in that case, I'm going to say it all the time," Clark said.
He smiled down at me.
"Where were we?"
"They were trying to cross the frozen lake," I said immediately. "And Marjorie was telling everyone about frostbite prevention."
"Oh, was she?"
Clark asked, but I could hear the laughter in his voice.
"Okay, so they're about to cross the lake."
He paused, and I waited, knowing that any minute now he'd suggest a possibility, and we'd go from there. And as it slowly started to get darker, we walked together, the leaves crunching under our feet, both of us tossing out ideas, trading off, adding a detail here and a moment there, as the world we were building unfolded, and the story, without any end that I could see, continued on. This has been an Audible Studios production of The Unexpected Everything. Written by Morgan Mattson. Performed by Bailey Carr. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 by Morgan Mattson. Production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.